So please give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Logan from the Next Frontier Home Group.
Hi, I'm Logan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Logan.
My sobriety date is November 4th of 2024. So if you do the math, I just hit 9 months a couple weeks ago. All right. I couldn't tell you when I had my first drink of alcohol. All right. My mom told me a story one day that they were sipping on some orange juice and vodka in the living room, and I was a toddler, and I came up and I drank one of the cups and fell on my face. All right. But I will say, I first discovered alcohol, or rediscovered it, whatever, in the summer after fifth grade, leading into sixth grade. All right. My parents, they had a liquor cabinet right in the kitchen in our trailer, and it was a whole bunch of bottles and all different types, you know, whiskeys, tequilas, and all that stuff. And I don't remember why or who or what the circumstances were that led up to it, but I knew that stuff they have up there, if I drink it, it's gonna have an effect on me. It's gonna do something. So I started sneaking liquor from my parents' cabins, you know, and me and a bunch of the guys from the trailer park that I grew up in would all get together and drink, and it was normal, whatever. Soon my mom, she found out what was going on, and she moved it to the top of the refrigerator. But I was tall, so I was able to still drink it up, right? So then they just stopped having alcohol in the house, or maybe they had it in their room, I don't remember, right? But I never forgot that feeling, and I think that time frame, I'm not sure how old I was, I think that's when I turned from cucumber to a pickle. That love was born. That desire to have more of that stuff. You know, it made me feel good. It made me feel complete. You know, like I was missing something, and when I had that in my body, I wanted more of it. Right. So, continuing forward. I had a relative normal childhood, all right? Both my parents, they were together up until about sixth grade, seventh grade. My father, who had both my parents were ex-addicts at that point, right? But my father had relapsed on whatever substance, and then my mom soon after followed, right? So it was just a lot of chaos in the household. And whatnot. And I guess to find like solace to get away from that, I would hang out with my friends, you know, and we would all get drunk, we started smoking marijuana, and etc., right? I knew from an early age that I was different when it came to alcohol consumption and the rest of the guys, right? Whenever I would drink, I would go to the extremes. I would drink so much that I would black out, right? I don't remember my first blackout because I was always a blackout drinker. Whenever I would drink, I would black out, and I just assumed that's what happened when you drank alcohol. You'd get blackout, and then you would wake up the next day, or you would, you know, like ran out, whatever you want to call it. You would have like some bits and pieces, and you might, you know, come to later on. To me, I think that's what happens when you drink. So I thought everybody else was on the same page as I was, right? That's as early as I can remember. Always trying to get alcohol, always trying to get marijuana or whatever. It was easier to get marijuana when I was younger, surprisingly enough. So that's what I would use for a couple years, you know. But I always knew that Lady Liquor, you know, the alcohol, I knew that was my girl. That was my freaking thing. As I got in from 8th grade and 9th grade and started going out there to see more, hang out with a lot of the older guys and going to different parties and stuff, my alcoholic consumption, it just kept going and going and going, right? And if I couldn't pay one of my mom's boyfriends to run to the liquor store for me, we would go to like a gas station out of town. And we would draw sticks, not really, but we would just pick, okay, yeah, you. And we'd have a guy go in there and, like, boost a freaking 24-pack or whatever. And then, okay, that's what we got for the night, you know. And then we would get out of there. And it just kept going and going and going. And this whole time, I didn't think... I really didn't think... And anything out of the ordinary of it, right? I just assumed I'm a young man, I'm a teenager, whatever. This is just, everyone else is doing this, right? As I kept getting older, I kind of realized that my little worldview was pretty jacked up. It wasn't normal, right? And I started forming a lot of resentments at an early age towards other people, right? You know, people who I thought had it better than me, and things like that, you know. Well, as I graduated high school, right? Well, actually, the last week of high school, it's kind of like a joke. You know, you just go in there, whatever. You go to like a couple classes, and then you get your degree on Thursday or Friday or whatever. All right. I ended up getting a bottle of freaking like bottom shelf vodka through one of my mom's boyfriends or whatever. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to bring this to school. Like, we would always bring bottles to school. I was the guy. You wanted alcohol, people would come to me because they knew I could get bottles. So people would come to me, and that's what the exchange was. And that was, I liked that. I thought it was cool. You know, it made me feel cool. Made me feel like I was part of something. Anyways, though, first period, I still remember, I'm in Mr. Brooks' class. He was a retired military dude in business finance class, and he liked me a lot, so I would just BS with him, and he'd give me a passing grade, right? So that's what it was, you know. I didn't really learn a whole lot about business in that class, but he's an older gentleman, right? And he's sitting there doing whatever, and anytime like he would come up talking to us, and then he would turn away to his computer and like do whatever. And whenever he would turn away, I had this big bottle of freaking whatever, and I'm do bring it down. And he comes back and starts talking, whatever. And you're turning away. Do. Did that the whole first period. Alright. Near the end of it, because I didn't know how to I thought I had like a problem with pacing myself, right? Like, I could never figure out how to pace myself. Like I just thought I would figure it out as I got older. I thought it would just click, like, okay, you're gonna figure it out. Anyways, at the end of this period, near the end of that period, before the bell rings, I start feeling real sick. I start sweating. I'm like, okay, I gotta get out of here. And I'm sitting there. They have a desk on the outside where they would send like the screw ups or whatever to see, you know, sit in the hallway. And I'm sitting there and I'm like just sweating like profusely. And I'm like, wow, I throw up all over myself, right? All over. And then I throw up all over the floor. And I'm like, oh God, I gotta clean this up before anyone sees. So I start like, I'm on my hands and knees, trying to pull up all this vomit. And then the freaking bell rings, and everybody comes out, and Mr. Brooks and Mr. Edmonds, who's tall dude, I kind of sound like Kermit the Frog. Right? They come out and they look at me and they're like, Logan, like what's going on? And I'm like, oh, I'm not feeling too good. They just shook their head, and that was that. I grew up in a smaller town, right? With like the graduating class of like 120 people. So everybody knew about my parents and my pops. My pops, he was constantly on the news for like stealing, robbing, whatever, you know, like Duluth man, so-and-so did whatever, because it was a smaller area, so when someone committed a crime like that, it'd be in the news. So everybody knew that. That happens, and then graduation happens, and then my mom says to me, she's like, you know, the only reason they passed you is because they felt bad for you because you're dad, right? I'm like, oh yeah, thanks, mom. But I'm like, all right, well, I got to get, around that time as well, I'm introduced to my grandfather, right? He's an old school Vietnam vet, right? He wasn't there when I was growing up because of my mother and whatnot. But as I got older, you know, I could drive and I reached out to my grandparents, right? And we start talking about the military and whatnot. And he was Vietnam, you know, in the Navy or whatever. And I'm thinking about that, I'm like, you know, Navy doesn't sound too bad. But I didn't enlist, I guess, or whatever, right away out of high school. I kind of wanted to enjoy myself that summer, you know, one last little summer of freedom or whatever. And it was just a whole bunch of more drunken stupidity, and I should have gotten in trouble. I should have gone in jail. I shouldn't be here. All right, I was doing a lot of stupid stuff, and thankfully I never got caught. Nothing ever seriously happened. Right, so I end up going to the recruiter's office that August 29th, and I got orders to leave to basic training January 11th of 2022. All right, so right after New Year's, cool, you know, New Year's. You got Christmas, whatever, I could care less for Christmas, but New Year's, it's a party. You know, we go out there, everybody gets together, we get jacked up, have a good one. All right, so I'm at my mom's, you know, and I'm talking to one of her boyfriends. He's kind of like a father figure, but he's a slime ball too, you know? And we're talking, and he's the guy that give me liquor all the time. And we got like this, a bottle of bullet bourbon, whatever you want to call it, some real nasty stuff. And we're sitting there, and we're kind of just doing shot for shot. And we're just BSing. My little sister, right? I got four siblings. There's five of us, right? I'm the second to last. My little sister, she's at a party way up in the country in Saginaw or whatever. And I'm like, you know, I'm just going to stay at home. Like, I'm drinking right now. I shouldn't be driving. I'm leaving for military and then the next week or whatever. So I'm just going to stay home. So I'm like, I'm going to drink this and just kind of just chill for the week. Well, I end up blacking out. I remember getting stuck. So I'm from Minnesota, right? And this is the wintertime. I remember getting stuck in a freaking ditch in my 94 Suburban. And this guy, and I remember being like just drunk as hell on the side of the road. Just, I didn't have like a jacket on or nothing. It's like a sweatshirt. And this guy pulls me out, you know, sends me on my way. And I go to this house party and I don't remember what happens, right? I wake up the next freaking day. I got this blanket on, right? I'm like, man, this blanket feels real good right now. I'm like, I'm not wearing any freaking pants, right? I'm nude from the waist down. I'm like, what the heck? I kind of get up and I start looking around. I'm like, I don't recognize where I'm at. I don't recognize because all these sleeping people, right? And I'm like, where are my pants, right? So I'm like kind of like looking around, whatever. I found my pair of pants. I slipped. Piss, covered in piss. And it's we're in like a house with no heat too in the middle of wintertime. So it's all cold and it's kind of stiff. So I'm like putting it on. I'm like, oh my God. I'm putting it on. And it's real bad. I had cuts all over my hands. I was looking in the mirror. I got a fat lip. My face is all jacked up. And I'm like, oh, this is not good. One of the people woke up. And they were cussing at me, whatever. And they're like, you got some nerves and all of a sudden. I'm like, I don't remember, like, what happened? I'm sorry. Apparently, I showed up here, and for the first, like, 10 minutes, people were like, yeah, man, like, you were having life of the party, having a good time, you know, and I'm blackout drunk. I don't remember any of this. They were like, you were having a good time. Then out of nowhere, a freaking switch flipped, and I just got real violent. And thankfully, I had a couple of my friends there, but there was multiple people that had to restrain me. Because I was getting so like physical and like just trying to, and I'm not like that as a person. I'm not that. I'm actually anti-confrontation. If there's a confrontation, I'm probably gonna leave me alone. Like, I don't want none of that, right? But my friends are like, no, he's leaving for the military. We've called the cops. We're gonna fuck up his chance. Just hold him here. Hold him here, right? So that happens, and then that's the first time when I was like, okay, like all these other times where I would get drunk and like pass out or piss myself or whatever the case was, it's like I could excuse that. Okay, whatever, just too much. But that, like, I really, like, I could feel in me. I'm like, wow, this is getting real bad. That's not good whatsoever. But I wasn't done. I left for the military, right? And basic training, everything's going good. Near the end, I start, you know, fantasizing about having a little rum coke and whatever. I get all my folks that came down to see my older brother. You brought a bottle, right? So, started drinking, you know. And he got mad because I drank the whole bottle that night, right? He's like, oh, that was my special bottle or whatever, right? And I'm like, sorry, man, it was... I don't know what it was. I'm sorry. I like no excuse. No excuse. Right, you know what I'm saying? Then go to A school or whatever. And I didn't know anyone there. Okay, now I'm just sitting there doing my thing, learning my job or whatever the case is, you know what I'm saying? And then of course I bump into some people and I'm like, yeah, these are my people right here. You know, people that like to go out there, cause trouble, and get messed up. Yeah, all right, cool. I got some friends. So being there, I already start breaking the rules, right? They give you like different when you're in school status or whatever, you gotta like check in and check out, obviously, right? And there's different phases. Like, oh, if you're on this phase, you have to be like in your uniform when you go out anywhere, even out in town. With this phase, you can be in your regular clothes, civilians or whatever. And if you got this stage, you got overnight. All right, well, I ended up, I don't know, I think I got it from a buddy, but I ended up getting like the max freaking phase without actually earning it. I just got it. I just freaking forged my name on there over his, and okay, whatever. So I'd go out and there was a freaking liquor shop right down the street, and we would go there and just get booze, and they didn't ID you either, so to go there and just get alcohol, whatever, and it's fun, and I'm barely passing the schooling that the military is paying me to go to, right, just barely passing it, because I didn't really care, all right, I really didn't care, if I'm being honest, I just wasn't there, I didn't care. I kept pushing the limit there, until one day I got a half gallon of Tito's vodka, terrible stuff. And I paid a guy to fill up, you know, to go out there and get it to me. And I'm in there in the barracks room. And the last thing I remember is I had a cup and I just took a couple sips from it. I swear to God, just a couple sips, not even enough to catch a buzz, just that was it. And the next thing I know, I'm being interrogated by the freaking military police, right? And they're on me and they're, breathalyzing, I don't know, I forgot what I blew, but they're getting on me and getting a statement from me, and I'm like freaking out. I'm like, oh God, you know, like this is the end of the world, whatever. I had blacked out drunk, went down, passed through everybody, out to, they have like a smoking pit out there, and I just passed out drunk in front of the fucking building, and one of the MAs, I was underage, one of the MAs came by, I was like, what the hell is this, you know, and, that's how I ended up going to Captain's Mass when I was in A school, right? In this like military court or whatever. And I got sentenced like 45 days. They like put you in a room, it's basically like jail. Like you're in a room, you have to get escorted out to go eat, and they escort you back, and you have to stay in there, you know, you don't got nothing. And then for lunch and stuff, and they're supposed to give you yard time, but they don't really give you yard time because they really don't care. So that goes on for 45 days. And even then, though, we would get some guys I'd be able to manage to, like, sneak in a beer or whatever. Like, here, yeah, keep up the morale, you know, like, oh, hell yeah, man. And I really didn't think there was a problem with it. I just, pardon for my swearing. It's kind of hard for me to talk without swearing. I just thought, all right, this is just like a bad time. It was just a bad time, right? And it just keeps going on and on and on. There'd be times like I got out there, I got to the fleet, and there'd be times where I was in the barracks, and I would wake up like in the freaking parking lot at 5 a.m., just like on the ground, just passed out. And some guys like, "Hey man, you're all right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm all right, man." And then I just that was, you know, I just kept going and going. Like I didn't really see a problem with it. I got deployed over in Bahrain, but it was mainly like you just get stationed out there and you're working out there, and that place is like Sodom and Gomorrah. All right, it's bad out there. You know, there's brothels, there's alcohol, everything short of gambling. It's not good. I don't want to get into it. All right, but it was not good. It's not good. I got back from there in March of 24, right? And I go straight to the drug and alcohol people, right? Because they got military people like that, and you can self-report. And I went and I was like, "Hey, look, I got a problem here. I need some sort of assistance. I need some sort of help." And they're like, "Well, we got this thing called AA. We recommend that you go to that." And they said AA, and I'm like, "Okay, sure. All right, sure. I'll go to a meeting." I didn't end up going. I didn't go. I didn't want to do that. It's like I'm like, I'm not an alcoholic. Like I don't like, I got a problem, but it's not, I don't need to go to a freaking AA meeting. Like it's not, that's not what it is. That's not what the problem is, man. It's something else. You know? I'm getting this confused for a second. We got back from Bahrain, and I was drunk driving on base, blackout drunk. All right, don't remember it. I started coming to, and I saw there was flights behind me. So okay, I pull over, and there's some MAs, right? And they take me, but they don't charge me with anything. They did me a solid, and they brought me to the barracks, and they took my driver's license, and they said, "You got to go self-report." And I was like, "Okay, whatever. And then I wasn't going to do it. I'm there at work, and we're talking. And I get this, the next day, right? I get this sensation. Something came over me. It was like a weighted blanket or something. It was just out of nowhere. It fell on me, and I was like, "I got to tell someone about this." And that's when I went, and I first told my superiors, and they brought me to the drug and alcohol people, and that's when they suggested AA. But I didn't want that. I wanted to keep doing what I was doing. So at this point, I know I got a problem, but I'm still drinking and stuff. I'm like, "You know, maybe I can just do it by myself." And maybe I can just do this, fix this myself. It can't be that hard. So I was just like, "Okay, well, then I'm just not going to drink. And I would get a couple days. And then I'm like, "See, like nothing crazy is going on." And then I would go get alcohol. And then something, it just kept escalating and escalating and escalating. I kept getting drunk. I kept just breaking stuff, doing wrong, drinking and driving, really bad, blackout, really bad. Really bad stuff, you know what I'm saying? Finally, I go home on leave. I forget why, but I'm up there, and I'm on a sick one, you know what I'm saying? Bar hopping, like boiler shots or whatever they call them. You put like a shot in a beer and you slam it. I'm going like bar to bar, doing it, whatever. I'm getting pretty freaking frosty. And I end up going up to the Indian reservation, and I park my truck right in the middle of the road and just pass out in the middle of the road. And the cops come, and you know, they come and arrest me. I'm blackout drunk, I don't remember. I have a loaded handgun inside the vehicle, right? And nothing. They just arrested me. Like the situation should have been much, much, much worse than it was, but it wasn't. You know, I come to in the jail cell and I'm like, well, it was about time. It's about time this happened because I knew this was gonna happen. I knew something. I knew this. It was gonna lead to this. Like something. I don't know. And that's like I got on my hands and knees and I just started praying to God. I said, God, if you get me out of this, I'm never gonna drink. I'm never gonna drink. I'm never gonna drink ever in the rest of my days ever. It was a Tuesday night. It was October 33rd. So it was like the day night before Halloween or something. Or Halloween was that Friday. I forget what it was. You know what I'm saying? And all they get is like this little tiny iPod. And it has like Joshua Graham or whatever. It's like some preacher from back in the day, right? So I'm like listening to that the whole time. And I'm like, I'm going to hell. I'm going to hell. I'm going to hell. And like it's funny to laugh about it. It's funny to say it now. But then I was terrified. You know, I was terrified. I was like, I'm unredeemable. You know. Court day happens. I get sentenced and I get out. And while I'm sitting there, one of the deputies, his name's Dustin. I still remember it. He was real nice. You know, he let me shave beforehand and all this other stuff. And he's like, yo, so someone's here to pick you up. I'm like, who's here to pick me up, you know? He's like, your grandpa. And I tell you what, I was more scared to go see my grandpa than I was to see the judge, mm-hmm. You know? A judge, whatever, I could deal with that. Military people, the captain, the CEO getting kicked out, whatever. But my grandpa, basically the only dude in my life who's been straight and honest with me, that was a tough one to handle, right? Being in a car with him, he wasn't mad, he wasn't upset. He just said he was disappointed in me, right? And that hurt. Still hurts thinking about it. So, go there. I call my chain of command. They say, you need to get your ass down here right now. So, get an airplane ticket. Go down there, right? And so, I go. I'm in the Minneapolis airport, you know. I love drinking in airports. It's a good time, it's fun. I don't like airplanes. And I'm sitting there and I go to this one Chili's, right? Because I've been there a bunch of times. I know that I actually know the waitress, she's real nice. And I go there and I sit down, I'm like, well, I got a couple hours. And I sit down and it was like autopilot. I just went there, I sat down to the booth I've sat before, and started getting drunk, all right? And then got hit the airplane, and then hit JFK, you know? And I got even drunker at JFK, all right? Then, whatever, fly, then I'm in Norfolk, my buddy comes, picks me up, and that's Sunday night. Sunday, November 3rd, all right? And then the next day, November 4th. I haven't had a drink since then. I'm there. I'm talking to my people, whatever, and they're explaining, you know, like, you messed up real bad, whatever. And, at this point, I'm like, okay, well, I'm getting kicked out the military. I got a DUI with a gun charge. Like, people get kicked out for less. You're done. But they send me over to a rehab facility in Williamsburg called Farley. All right, you guys might know people who've been to the Farley Center or whatever. It's a pretty good rehab up there. It's for 31 days, and I go up there, you know what I'm saying? And that's when I picked up my first white chip that Wednesday night, you know, because they do meetings in there, right? And it was some powerful stuff, you know, tears were flowing, picking up that little piece of plastic, right? Go through rehab, just thinking about everything and talking to some of the other people. And they're surprisingly, there was a lot of young sailors, a lot of young guys that were kind of in a similar position that I was in, right? Most of them, though, were like, you know, screw the military, I'm getting out. I, on the other hand, was like, I want to stay in if I can. I don't want to go back home. I go to court actually in rehab as well. And this is just kind of like funny, but I'm wearing like an Iron Maiden t-shirt and it's green, and but the camera thing is like cropped off, so you can't, it looks green. And my lawyer's like, so he's wearing his uniform right now, he's an ex-sumptuary sailor, whatever. But the state, I cut a deal with the state where they dropped all the charges except the DWI, right? I also had like a I don't think it was an assault on a police officer, but it was like obstruction. It was something because I was getting physical with the cops. Like I was trying to wrestle them. So they dropped the gun charges, dropped all this stuff, and I'm like, holy crap, that's like amazing. That's really freaking good. And that was on December 12th, you know what I'm saying? Oh, that was December 9th, and then I got out of that rehab on the 12th. I got a temporary sponsor when I was there, this fellow named Joshua, or Josh. And I got out, and I went to my first real AA meeting out in town. It was the Easy Does It Club, right? And I went in there, and I went in there and I sat down to one of the people there, one of the older ladies who has like a really unique laugh and is a little off-putting to say the least. I don't want to name drop them, but I sat next to her because my buddy was sitting next to her. Terrible idea, but it almost scared me off. Or it just like, wow, so this is what AA is. Like, these people are certified. You know, these people are nuts. And then I start thinking about it, and I'm like, well, I'm certified. I just came out of a freaking mental institution. You know what I'm saying? I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And they said, hey, man, you got to do this thing 90 and 90. Okay, well, what's that? You got to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Okay, easy. I go on the meeting app, and there's a bunch of meetings. There happens to be a meeting for every single day of the week right next to my place. I don't got a vehicle. I don't got a bike. It's the middle of December. Oh, yeah, it was December. What was it? Last December, you know what I'm saying? So I start walking to these meetings. I start walking. Meeting every single day. I'm going. Right. Eventually, I ran into the guy that was going to be my sponsor, right? And I didn't break up with my old sponsor, my temporary sponsor. I just stopped calling him, right? I made the amends, though. I ran into him recently, so we're good. But I left him hanging, you know? And we start going over the book, the 164, at the place that's become my home group, the next frontier or the new frontier, something like that. But we would go back there every Wednesdays and Sundays. We'd get there an hour early, and we would read the whole book, or read, like, you know, break it up, and we'd start reading the book, and we start going through the steps, and we'd start going through it all. The first three steps made a lot of sense to me. You know, I used to say, I got the best, worst luck. All these bad things happen to me. These bad things with my mom, my dad, getting hooked on drugs, to embarrassing myself, to picking fights, and all this other stuff, right? All this self-pity stuff. And, but all these bad things would happen, but I would have, like, the best outcome from the situation, right? I now realize that's God. It was God guiding me through. It was Him looking out for me. He was giving me these tests to push me, right? Because I didn't want to listen. I'm a hard head, you know, school of hard knocks. So I had to mess up to learn. That's what I now know as facts. One of the miracles that has happened to me was the military didn't kick me out. All right. I'd never even went and saw the CO about it, our captain or nothing. They had dropped the ball in their eyes because they didn't send me somewhere sooner, right, when I reached out to them. So the chiefs were covering their own butts. And Nothing. To this day, I have never gone through the board or the mess or cabin's mess or nothing. Nothing's happened, right? I actually made rank while I was in rehab, and I put it on like 4 months afterwards. I don't know. I explained that one. I do my fourth step with my sponsor, right? And I write down a list, and initially it was just a handful of people. It was like a handful of people, like maybe six or four, something like that, right? But I'm like, yeah, these are like some men's right now. And there's a part where they say, yeah, you talk to your guy about this, and you go home and do an hour meditation, right? And you got to look over everything and like look over my program and like where I'm at so far. And I got that feeling again about that weighted feeling. And I picked up and I wrote a whole new one. All these names, all these people, all these things and places, like. Called my sponsor, hey man, we got to do this again. So I went there and I did it again with them. I was extremely honest and humble, and it was just a very, very, very powerful feeling. It's God, you know, or God as I understand him. Some time passed, and I find myself back up home in Minnesota 9 months later. All right, my sister's getting married, and I got to go up there and suit up and show up. And I got a purpose, I got a plan, I got all the stuff I got to do when I go up there. And it was kind of like a real test, because I'm away from everybody. The temptation is high, and the obsession you would call it, but like the thought, you know, like I could go up here and get drunk and no one would really know except myself. But I didn't get drunk. I went up there that first night. I went to an AA meeting up there. It was a whole lot different from Ocean View AA, I tell you what. And I think, I don't know how they do it up there. It's a little weird, but in Ocean View, we got it figured out. I started hitting meetings up there, and I start making amends. I start going and doing, making amends to these people, and mainly to these institutions with the tribal police, and I got my firearm back. And there was a situation too I forgot to mention, where I had a dog that I left at my mom's house, and I was really neglecting the dog, because I had this dog, and then I would go and get freaking drunk and party, and I wasn't taking care of him. And I brought him with me at my mom's, and I realized, well, I gotta get rid of this dog. So I go up to the animal shelter, and at that particular one, there's a fee to surrender it, right? And I was like, well, I'm not gonna have any money, because I'm gonna be needing a lawyer, so I'm just gonna give him the dog. And I wrote down like a fake, phony name, but me being a freaking knucklehead, the dog's freaking shipped to me, right? So as soon as I walk out of there, they start calling my phone. And there's a huge Facebook post with like a couple hundred shares within the hour, people calling me. It's this huge, huge ordeal, you know? But it's funny, but at the time, it was like, I'm saying like, this is really happening? Oh my God, my actions have consequences? But when I was up there and I was able to make amends to the animal shelter, I was like, how much does it cost to surrender a dog? Well, $100. All right, so I got $200 worth of food and all this other stuff, and I went there and I made a donation. You know, I donated this food, and I wasn't going to tell them. I was going to do it anonymously, but I had like a burning desire to at least tell the person, like, hey, look, so I like 9 months ago, this huge thing, like this ordeal happened, and they're like, oh, it's fine. And then I felt a lot better about it.
Right.
I made a couple amends to some people, and it didn't go how I expected in my head to go.
Right.
I had unrealistic expectations. Okay. And I remained humble about it, and I kept my mouth shut. But I left feeling a certain type of way, right? Like, I went here, and like I'm making amends to someone who, in my head, is just as guilty as I am, if not more, right? Kind of a real slime ball. And then they like high horse me the whole time, right? And be like, it wasn't nice. It wasn't, you know, because I was expecting, I don't know, you know, unrealistic expectations. That leads to, I mean, coming back here, and I actually sort of had forgotten that I was supposed to be coming up here to speak on this day, right? Because I got back here just a couple days ago. And I'm trying to think of how I need to tie this all together here at the end, so just bear with me for a second. I got sober by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and you people in these rooms. All right. I'm extremely grateful to have the opportunity to come up here and speak and BS and to share my story. All right. I really hope someone out there has gotten something from it. It's been a privilege. With that, I'm gonna sit down.